Chapter 5, beginning in verse 21. Glory to you, Lord Jesus Christ. When Jesus had again crossed over by boat to the other side of the lake, a large crowd gathered around him. While he was by the lake, one of the synagogue rulers, named Jairus, came there. Seeing Jesus, he fell at his feet and pleaded earnestly with him. "My little daughter is dying. Please come and put your hand on her so that she will be healed and live." So Jesus went with him. A large crowd followed and pressed around him. A woman was there who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years. She had suffered a great deal under the care of many doctors and had spent all she had. Yet instead of getting better, she grew worse. When she heard about Jesus, she came up behind him in the crowd and touched his cloak, because she thought, "If I just touch his clothes, I will be healed." Immediately her bleeding stopped and she felt in her body that she was freed from her suffering. At once Jesus realized that power had gone out from him. He turned around in the crowd and asked, "Who touched my clothes?" "You see the people crowding against you," his disciples answered, "and yet you can ask who touched me." But Jesus kept looking around to see who had done it. Then the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came and fell at his feet, and trembling with fear, told him the whole truth. He said to her, "Daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace and be free from your suffering." While Jesus was still speaking, some men came from the house of Jairus, the synagogue ruler. "Your daughter is dead," they said. "Why bother the preacher anymore?" Ignoring what they said, Jesus told the synagogue ruler, "Don't be afraid, just believe." He did not let anyone follow him except Peter, James, and John, the brother of James. When they came to the home of the synagogue ruler, Jesus saw a commotion, the people crying and wailing loudly. He went in and said to them, "Why all this commotion and wailing? The child is not dead, but asleep." But they laughed at him. After he put them all out, he took the child's father and mother and the disciples who were with him and went in where the child was. He took her by the hand and said to her, "Talitha kum," which means, "Little girl, I say to you, get up." Immediately, the girl stood up and walked around. She was 12 years old. At this, they were completely astonished. He gave strict orders not to let anyone know about this and told them to give her something to eat. This is the Gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you, Lord Jesus Christ.
You aren't going to have a sermon this morning. You're going to have a talk. A little bit different from a sermon. But having said that, I'm going to make a comment on that gospel reading. I guess you heard that Jesus had been asked to save the daughter of Jairus, who was one of the hobnobs of the synagogue. But when he was on his way to do that, he stopped to take care of a woman who had been bleeding for 12 years. Now, I'm not a woman, so I can't really imagine what it would be like to be bleeding for 12 years. But as we heard, she was out of money, and you could be sure that she would have been regarded as being unclean. She would have been probably spurned. She probably didn't have a family. She was out of money. She was probably ignored. People looked the other way or looked on the other side of the street when they saw her. But Jesus had compassion. He stopped. He cared for her. He could have easily, I guess, walked on the other side of the street too. Because he was on a good mission to go and save the daughter of Jairus. But he stopped and he cared. That is a great example, I think, from Jesus for us. Today we're going to talk about homelessness on the Sunshine Coast. I guess I've not always sort of thought about homelessness or sort of saw it as being a particular issue. I know that many times I've been in America, for example, so I've worked for an American company. I saw a lot of homeless people in cities like New York and Los Angeles and San Francisco. And I thought, well, thank God. Yeah, I come from Australia. Yeah, we have Centrelink and we have Medicare and we have safety nets and all these sorts of things. We don't have any homeless people in Australia. Wrong. And when we came to the Sunshine Coast, I didn't give homelessness any consideration at all. This is a great place for people to come for holidays. Retirees from down south come up and dressed up and selling their houses in Sydney and Melbourne. Yeah, we've got plenty of money on the Sunshine Coast. Yeah, homelessness couldn't possibly be a problem. There's, all the tradies seem to be busy. There's cranes and there's, whole suburbs are being built. So there couldn't possibly be any homelessness on the Sunshine Coast. Wrong. I learnt about a neighbourhood centre from a lady who I met on the beach. Her name is Hetty, and she volunteered on Thursday nights out doing cooking at the neighbourhood centre for homeless people. I thought, oh, that's interesting. So there are some homeless people. And I asked her, how many people sort of come to dinner? And she said, I know 30-odd, I suppose. Now recently it's been up to 60 come for meals in this, the neighbourhood centre on a Tuesday and a Thursday night. But I guess, all that time and for most of my life, I've been one of those people who've walked on the other side of the road, who've looked away. Of course there has been homelessness, like I said, in Australia. There's homelessness on the Sunshine Coast. My understanding of homelessness, my change in attitude, I think, came from meeting a couple of homeless people on the beach that I met on my walk along the beach in the mornings. The first bloke I met, his name was Harry, and he'd been living on the beach for a little while, and I think I'd walked past many times looking out to sea, looking at the sunrise over there with Harry lying on the beach. But I hadn't seen him. I guess I didn't want to see him. Now, Harry looked like a homeless person. If you were going to cast somebody in a Hollywood movie for someone who was homeless, Harry would be your first choice. I don't know how old Harry was. Could have been 40, could have been 50, could have been 60. But his health and his whole demeanour was something of a person who was 70 or 80. He was unkempt, he was dirty, his hair was all matted. He had about four layers of clothes, all of which were dirty. And I stopped and talked with him. I did tell him about if you want to go to the neighbourhood centre, you could have a shower, you could have a meal, you could get his clothes washed, you could get fresh clothes, all that sort of stuff. And he just said, look, I'm all right. Every Tuesday and Thursday afternoon, for about a month, I went down there about 4:30 in the afternoon to the beach and asked him if I could take him up to the neighbourhood centre. And he always said, no, I'm all right. But it was obviously that he wasn't. After a little while, Harry shifted from the beach and went up, and he was living in a hedge just behind a service station on Aerodrome Road in Richmond. Now, I did see him there at times. I brought him some food occasionally. Against the best recommendations, I gave him some money on a couple of occasions. But eventually, he came to the notice of the police, and Harry was moved on. Don't know where he was moved on to, but they just moved on because people didn't like seeing him there. Yeah, I'm getting here to be honoured. There was nowhere for him to go to on the Sunshine Coast. Yeah, but as far as the police are concerned or the politicians are concerned, there's no homelessness on the Sunshine Coast. Yeah, which is wrong. Now, second person that I met on the beach was Joe. And Joe was a bloke in his late 30s. In fact, he turned 38 on the beach. And I sat down and spoke with Jay on a couple of mornings and I found out that he was a Christian. But I saw a book amongst all his belongings, which were all sort of scattered around him. And there was the Bible there. And we talked about our faith and we prayed together. I did take him up to Cotton Tree for breakfast. In fact, for a couple of weeks I took him up for breakfast most mornings. And we had a vegetarian pie, because he was a vegetarian. And so we went up to the pie shop and had a vegetarian pie. I took him to meet Marco at the neighbourhood centre. And he was able to avail himself of the food and the clean clothes and all that stuff. But then it started to rain. This is back last November, if you can recall, we had a lot of rain here. And poor Jay got, and he got soaked a number of times. A number of times I helped him get his gear up to the lifesavers or occasionally up to the laundromat where he could shelter. But then they started to forecast this really, really, really heavy rain for the next week. And I said to him, mate, look, you can't stay on the beach. We have to find somewhere for you. I went and we had a talk with Mark at the neighbourhood centre and we started a conversation with a shelter up in America, because there are no shelters for men anywhere between Brisbane and America, because we don't have homelessness on the Sunshine Coast. Wrong. In the meantime, we thought, look, we're getting accommodation of backpackers. So we called up the backpackers, and we paid in advance, we took Jay to the backpackers, but he couldn't stay there because he didn't have any ID. He didn't have a driver's license, he didn't have a credit card, we didn't have a Medicare card. So in fact, as far as I was concerned, he was nobody and he couldn't stay. Now, people who are homeless quite often don't have all that stuff because they've lost them or they've been stolen. So we took Jay back to our place. We got all his clothes all nice and dry. Diane gave him a haircut. We had a shower, of course, and a meal. He stayed overnight with us. We prayed together. And next morning when we rang up the shelter at Maribara, they said it was a spot that just become available. It's a really heavy rain. We drove up to Maribara and said, just imagine what it would have been like for Jay had he not been in the car or not been in the house. We took him up to Maribara where he found accommodation at a shelter which has staff that he could help him to do things like all his stuff with Centrelink, all that sort of stuff to help him get back on his feet again. Jay did message me a couple of days after we went up and he said all was going really good. But I've not heard from Jay since. And I hope I don't. I certainly hope that I don't see him on the beach again. But I've sort of changed my view on homelessness by meeting some of these people. And I have been sharing that might change some of our attitudes. I didn't see it as being a problem, but it certainly is. Now, a person who knows a lot more about homelessness than I do is Mark Ellis, who is the Community Development Coordinator at the Neighbourhood Centre, and Mark is going to speak to us now.
Thanks, Mark. Yeah, guys, thank you for allowing me the opportunity to come and have a bit of a chat to you guys. I'll try and keep it brief. It's a massive issue, and if I go over the time to keep it down, it's dragging me off. It needs to. So, as Don mentioned, that I actually work at the British Home Centre in Cotton. We're not a homeless service at all. We don't get funded to work with homeless people at all. The reason why we're actually doing it is because I had a 77-year-old man sleeping outside my office My office is outside the actual building, and he was actually laying right outside my door, so I basically had to step over him to get into my office. And basically just having a chat to him, it come to our attention that we had about 12 homeless men living just around our building in Coventry. So to give you a quick one, there's 125 homeless people just in Maroochydore alone, but there is actually only 1,600 people homeless here on the Sunshine Coast. That's quite an underestimated sort of number, but that's what the figures say. I look at that, that's probably close to 2,000. But the Maroochydore Homeless Centre has been around for about 34 years. And we have a family support program that actually works with families that are really struggling. We have a lot of families that basically have come through GB and all that sort of stuff. So we have a volunteer of people that go in and work with these people for 12 to 2 years to help them get back on track and with their children and all that sort of stuff. We have an occasional care service as well for children 0 to 5 years old. For people who can't afford mainstream stuff, and then there's my program, which is community development. So my program is basically was to work with community and development programs and stuff like that. So I was approached 3 years ago by two volunteers that work at the centre who basically saw what I was actually seeing and said, can we start doing feeding these guys, and it was like, okay, so how we do it. So I ran an organisation called Cos Harvest, and they come on board and they actually donate all the food to us. So they collect the food from the farmers markets, and then they drop it off to us on a Tuesday morning, and we look at what we have, and then they go, we're going to cook this. So on a Tuesday and Thursday, the people get a main meal and a dessert. So when we spoke about it, I actually said that it has to be veggies. It can't be just junk food, because when you're homeless, you don't get veggies, not unless you get it out of a can. And it's usually cold, because they don't have nowhere to heat it up. So you can't throw a tin of veggies on or a tin of soup on a barbecue and just spread down the whole seal of that. So that's basically the Bruce Harris cell. Over the time that we've actually done these community dinners, we've actually provided 6,107 meals. 778 loads of washing have been done through an organisation called Orange Fly Laundry. We have a mobile hot shower, because one of the things that we found when I was talking to the homeless men was there was no hot showers on the Sunshine Coast anywhere. They'd have a shower on the beach between the hours of midnight and 5 in the morning, because the other times people were on the beach. A lot of people say, why is that? To have it at midnight, and I was like, well, do you get a shower in your clothes? And they were like, well, no. I said, well, why don't you? So hence why it's at that time. And in the winter, it's cold water. They've got to use the shirt that they actually wear to dry themselves, and then they would put that shirt back on, lay down into the damp sand, and then try and have a sleep. Totally impossible. Doesn't happen at all. So basically, we started a GoFundMe page to look at getting a hot shower, mobile hot shower. And over very quick period of time, probably less than 12 months, we actually had three completely funded by the community mobile hot showers. So we had one at work at Maroochydore, one in Gambrel, one in Gympie, all being used for people hot showers. We've had work, we've had 468 of them come and have a shower. We've handed out 180 blankets, 7 street swags. We have 3 hairdressers come every 6 weeks to provide haircuts. So we've done 150 haircuts. We've done 400 food packages, 160 pair of jeans, 180 new or second-hand t-shirts and hoodies, 678 pairs of new underwear and socks, and 80 pairs of bombs. And that is basically all donated by the community. So it's a great thing, and you guys have been all part of that, so thank you very much. Really appreciate it. I know that the people that actually get the food and they get the bits and pieces that the blankets and everything you guys provide is through that, just going, thank you very much. So on behalf of them, thank you. So let me get into it. I'll try and get this down. But homeless, how does someone become homeless? Yeah, there's many situations that trigger homelessness, loss of job, lack of affordable housing, financial hardship, leaving foster care as a young person, being released to jail, because they're all released to jail into homelessness because there's nowhere to transition to, they just go, no, you don't have time, see you later. Escaping domestic violence, substance abuse, mental and other illnesses. So in a sense, it doesn't take much to become homeless. Yeah, for many on the coast, you know, a lot of homeless people, they started off with a job. They were renting a unit or a flat. They had friends, dignity, and they had a hope for the future. Like everyone was here has a hope for something, you know. So, but then they lose their job, and after a while they can't afford their rent. And they don't want to tell their families the rest of the embarrassment. So they move into a cheap hotel, thinking to themselves, just one night, so they can, you know, get working, get back into my family. However, all that takes money, and they regress down to the caravan parks. And they start to lose things along the way because they're going to sell their furniture, pop all their personal items, their computers, their phones, all that sort of stuff. Things get tighter, and they end up sleeping on a friend's couch. They wear out their welcome, you know, bit by bit they lose their friends, then their dignity, and then their hope just seeps away. And they're actually just sitting around thinking to themselves, what happened? Yeah, I'm one of the homeless people. But it doesn't take much. Just little steps all the way down. Yeah, there's a lot of them, I've spoken to a lot of them, and I always think, it's okay, I'll get this other job. And I'll just, you know, find back on and start doing it. But it doesn't happen. Yeah. Yeah, what bothered them? And what they actually own is condensed down to two bags that they have to carry around with them all day, every day. Because if they leave it in the bushes, as Tom said, they, you know, they lose it. People come along and they take it. So they've got no ID all the time. And it costs money to get your ID, money they don't have. So they just go, okay. So in a sense, they're nobody. You know? But I'd always say that, homeless people were something sometime. Now we've had horticulturalists, we've had carpenters, builders, all sorts of tradies, all become homeless because of the situation. You know? So yeah, it's just a massive thing for eating, especially on the Sunshine Coast, as Don said, the government. One sitting member said to me, I went and spoke to them in their office, and it sort of ended the conversation for me with them, but they actually told me that a homeless bloke is actually fine. If you give them a six pack of beer and a chook, they will be absolutely fine, which ended the conversation for me. I just said, man, what planet do you live on? Where's the home on one planet? And I said, that's it, we're done, you know. So I just got up and walked out of the office. It was just, yeah, I wasn't going to believe what I was hearing, you know. So. The latest census tells us that there's 116,427 homeless people in Australia. Yeah, as I said, we have 1,600 on the coast. And to put this into perspective, I suppose, we don't have a sports stadium in Australia big enough to house the homeless people. The MCG is the biggest one we have, holds 100,000 people, so you've got 16,000 people still waiting to get in the doors. If you look at towns, there's more homeless people than live in Port Macquarie. There's more homeless people that live in the Mall system. More homeless people that live in Bendigo and Victoria. More homeless people than live in Bunbury in Western Australia. And in Queensland, if you look at homelessness as a city, it's actually the same size as Mackay. So there's 115,000 people that live in Mackay, and we have 116,000 people that are homeless in Australia. So basically, what's it like here on the coast? Like I said, we have 1,600 people here on the coast that are homeless. We have 335 living from Maroochydore to Currumundi along the coastal strip here. So in the sand dunes and all through them, like the back of the plaza and all that sort of stuff here. All just living down here, living around there. Over here, living people. So we have 1,577 people on the housing. government housing. 497 of them will probably never get an opportunity to get a home because they are actually accessed as minor and not at high need. We have 3 shelters for women and children, escaping domestic violence, 1 shelter specifically for women, 2 shelters for young people, 2 for animals, and not 1 for men. And as Paul said, we are in places like Little Brisbane, which is 105 k's that way, or 170 k's that way to Maryborough. So that's a fair walk. So when you're homeless, you don't have a vehicle to get there. So it's, yeah, I don't know. I wouldn't like to actually walk it, that's for sure. But when we talk about homeless as well, we often talk about just the roof over our head. But there's a lot of other barriers as well that come to homeless, especially for men. And a lot of the barriers are that they're given an opportunity to be healthy. They have no storage to put their gear, no cooking facilities or refrigeration, so they actually can't buy anything fresh. It has to be canned food or Macca's or something like this. When sleep deprivation basically puts men at risk of heart problems, stroke and diabetes, and then there's the other stuff which just comes this confusion, poor motor coordination, the loss of short-term or long-term memory, impaired judgment and personality changes. And I often talk to when people talk to each other, that fellow over there is a crackpot. It's like, mate, he hasn't slept for probably a week. So basically, I know that if I don't get enough sleep, and if I'm up for a few nights, I get cranky. There's no doubt about it, I do. These guys don't sleep at all. They don't sleep during the day because there's nowhere for them to sleep, and then they don't sleep at night, they do because they have one eye open. Because someone, especially on the weekends, because people leave the pubs and then they think it's a great thing to actually give them a bit of a touch up as they go along. So they don't come into my office and their face is just all black and blue, and I said, what happened to you? Well, someone gave me a kick in my walls in my sleeping bag last night. So when you're in a sleeping bag, you can't just get up. So they just curl up and just try and take it. So then you've got the limited access to basic hygiene, no hot showers. No access to toilets during the night, because during the day it's okay. But come 5 o'clock, all the public toilets are locked, so they actually can't go in there. I've been arguing with the council for about six, seven months now about getting a couple opened by the obvious users. So basically there's that where they don't have nowhere to go to go to a loo. So they get locked out of McDonald's, they've all been McDonald's, now you have to pay before they can even code to get in. You've got to buy food. 7-Eleven and everything like that, the doors at 10 o'clock, you can't get in. So there's nowhere for them to actually go to the toilet. So then you've got your communal eating and drinking, so they share all the cups and everything. So you've basically got your flus, your Hep A's, your Hep C's, all that sort of happens as well. And then you've got the dehydration, the sunburn, the bacterial fungal skin, infections, insect bites from the nodules and the ticks. And then you've also got snakes and spiders. I've had lots of people come in with spider bites. I've actually had people come in and go, oh, the molly mark, they actually woke up this morning, there was a brown snake near me. So they come out of the bush because they're on the beach and fried the life out of my family too. But then there's the increased risk of violence, sexual assault, robbery, all that comes from sleeping on the street, absence of family, and the ability to afford medications. Hence why they have mental health issues, because they don't get medicated while they forget to take the medication. No place to rest, recover when they're sick. When you're sick, we all sit in bed, like I do, I sit on the couch and moan and groan and have man flu, And yet these guys are expected to actually get up and walk around all day, every day when they've got the flu. We now at work every year we have a flu vaccination program where homeless paid people who come and give them, they get flu shots if they're not. This happened because three of the homeless blokes that I knew actually passed away from complications of the flu. And I thought, no, it's probably something to do with it, so we went ahead and done that. So lack of storage for personal belongings, no transport, to attend doctor's settlement, all that stuff. So if I said to a homeless person, you need to go and see a doctor, you need to go and see the housing, you need to go and see settlement, you need to go and see, come and see me, at this point, they've got to walk. That's an 8-hour trip just walking around because there's no transport. They can't afford to jump on the bus. Is homeless a, is it a solvable problem? No, it's not. If you look at countries like Finland, they've reduced their homeless rate by 35%, where in Australia, at the same period of time, their homeless rate has risen 31%. So how do they think they do it? By providing housing. So in Australia, we say to people, get your act together and we'll give you a place to stay. But you need to actually get your act together. And it's pretty hard when you're down and you're in the gutter trying to do something like that. You can't get it together. Housing First basically takes that person and puts them into a unit and then works with them while they've actually got a roof over their head, they've got a bed, they've got a shower, they've got a toilet. So they're actually living somewhere and then people can go in and work with them. It costs $48,000 a year to get one homeless person homeless. That's not to help them, that's just to get that money. So that money can actually be redirected into housing. Would be much, much better. So thank you. I'll finish up now. So, thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you.